Odyssey. Calypso. Ulysses reaches Sharia on a raft. And now as dawn rose from her couch, beside Tithonus, harbinger of light, alike to mortals and immortals, the gods met in council with them. What'd you say, dear?
Stoneface sound a little bit more enthusiastic
about it. I'm reading about the gods. It gets more...
I understand,
more,
but still.
It gets more mellow later on.
Okay, I'm just saying, your tone is kind of...
Speaking of gods and legends.
Oratory, rather than...
And now as dawn rose from her couch beside Tithonus, harbinger of light alike to mortals and immortals, the gods met in council with them. Jove, the lord of thunder, who is their king. Thereon Minerva began to tell them of the many sufferings of Ulysses, for she pitied him away there in the house of the nymph Calypso. Father Jove, said she, and all you other gods that live in everlasting bliss, I hope there may never be such a thing as a kind and well-disposed ruler any more, nor one who will govern equitably. I hope they will all henceforth be cruel and unjust. There is not one of their subject but has forgotten Ulysses, who ruled them as though he were their father. There he is, lying in great pain, in an island where dwells the nymph Calypso, who will not let him go, and he cannot get back to his own country, for he can find neither ship nor sailor to take him over the sea. Furthermore, wicked people are now trying to murder his only son, Telemachus, who is coming home from Pylos and Lacedaemon, where he has been to see if he can get news of his father. What, my dear, are you talking about? Replied her father. Did you not send him there yourself because you thought it would help Ulysses to get home and punish the suitors? Besides, you're perfectly able to protect Telemachus and see him safely home again while the suitors have to come scurrying back without having killed him. When he had thus spoken, he said to his son Mercury, Mercury, you are our messenger. Go, therefore, and tell Calypso, we have decreed that poor Ulysses is to return home. He is to be convoyed, neither by gods nor men, but after a perilous voyage of 20 days upon a raft. He is to reach fertile Sharia, the land of the Phaeacians, who are near of kin to the gods, and will honor him as though he were one of ourselves. They will send him in a ship to his own country, and will give him more bronze and gold and raiment than he would have brought home back from Troy if he had had all his prize money and gotten home without disaster. This is how we have settled that he shall return to his country and his friends. Thus he spoke, and Mercury, guide and guardian, slayer of Argus, did as he was told. Forthwith, he bound on his glittering golden sandals, with which he could fly like the wind, over land and sea. He took the wand with which he seals men's eyes in sleep, or wakes them as he pleases, and flew, holding it in his hand over Perea. Then he swooped down through the firmament till he reached the level of the sea, whose waves he skimmed like a cormorant that flies, fishing every hole and corner of the ocean, and drenching its thick plumage in the spray. He flew and flew over many a weary wave, but when at last he got to the island which was his journey's end, he left the sea and went on by land till he came to the cave where the nymph Calypso lived. He found her at home. There was a large fire burning on the hearth, and one could smell from afar the fragrant reek of burning cedar and sandalwood. As for herself, she was busy at her loom, shooting her golden shuttle through the warp and singing beautifully. Round her cave there were thick wood of alder, poplar, and sweet-smelling cypress trees, wherein all kinds of great birds had built their nests. Owls, hawks, and the chattering sea crows that occupy their business in the water. A vine loaded with grapes was trained and grew luxuriant about the mouth of the cave, and there were also four running rills of water in channels cut pretty close together and turned hither and thither so as to irrigate the beds of violets and luscious herbage over which they flowed. Even a god could not help being charmed with such a lovely spot. So Mercury stood and looked at it. And when he admired it sufficiently, he went inside the cave. Calypso knew him at once, for the gods all know each other, no matter how far they live from one another. But Ulysses was not within. He was on the seashore, as usual, looking out upon the barren ocean with tears in his eyes, groaning and breaking his heart for sorrow. Calypso gave Mercury a seat and said, "Why have you come here to see me, Mercury? Honored and ever welcome, for you do not visit me often. Say what you want. I will do it for you at once if I can, and if it can be done at all. But come inside, and let me set refreshments before you." As she spoke, she drew a table loaded with ambrosia beside him and mixed him some red nectar. So Mercury ate and drank till he had had enough and then said, "We are speaking, God and goddess, together. And you ask me why I have come here, and I will tell you truly as you would have me do. Jove sent me. It was no doing of mine who could possibly want to come all this way over the sea, where there are no cities full of people to offer me sacrifice or choice hecatombs. Nevertheless, I had to come, for none of us other gods can cross Jove or transgress his order. He says that you have here the most ill-starred of all those who fought 9 years before the city of King Priam and sailed home in the 10th year after having sacked it. On their way home, they sinned against Minerva, who raised both wind and wave against them, so that all his brave companions perished, and he alone was carried hither by wind and tide. Jove says that you are to let this man go at once, for it is decreed that he shall not perish here, far from his own people, but shall return to his house and country and see his friends again." Calypso trembled with rage when she heard this. "You gods," she exclaimed, "ought to be ashamed of yourselves. You are always jealous and hate seeing a goddess take a fancy to a mortal man and live with him in open matrimony. So when rosy-fingered Dawn made love to Orion, you precious gods were all of you furious till Diana went and killed him in Ortygia. So again, when Ceres fell in love with Iason and yielded to him in a thrice-ploughed fallow field, Jove came to hear of it before very long and killed Iason with his thunderbolts. And now you are angry with me too because I have a man here. I found the poor creature sitting all alone astride of a keel, for Jove had struck his ship with lightning and sunk it in mid-ocean, so that all his crew were drowned. And while he himself was driven by wind and waves to my island, I got fond of him and cherished him and had my heart set on making him immortal, so that he should never grow old all his days. Still, I cannot cross Jove, nor bring his counsels to nothing. Therefore, if he insists upon it, let the man go beyond the seas again. But I cannot send him anywhere myself, for I have neither ships nor men who can take him. Nevertheless, I will readily give him such advice in all good faith as will be likely to bring him safely to his own country." "Then send him away," said Mercury, "or Jove will be angry with you and punish you." On this, he took his leave, and Calypso went out to look for Ulysses, for she had heard Jove's message. She found him sitting on the beach, with his eyes ever filled with tears and dying of sheer homesickness, for he'd got tired of Calypso, and though he was forced to sleep with her in the cave by night, it was she, not he, that would have it so. As for the daytime, he spent it on the rocks and on the seashore, weeping, crying aloud for his despair, and always looking out upon the sea. Calypso then went close up to him and said, "My poor fellow, you shall not stay long here grieving and fretting your life out any longer. I am going to send you away of my own free will. So go, cut some beams of wood and make yourself a large raft with an upper deck, that it may carry you safely over the seas. I will put bread and wine and water on board to save you from starving. I will also give you clothes and will send you a fair wind to take you home. If the gods in heaven so will it, for they know more of these things and can settle them better than I." Ulysses shuddered when he heard her. "Now, goddess," he answered, "if there is something behind all of this, you cannot be readily meaning to help me home when you bid me do such a dreadful thing as to put out to sea on a raft. Not even a well-found ship with a fair wind could venture out on such a distant voyage. Nothing that you can say or do shall make me go aboard a raft unless you first solemnly swear that you mean me no mischief." Calypso smiled at this, and caressed him with her hand. "You know a great deal," said she, "but you are quite wrong here. May heaven above and earth below be my witness, with the waters of the river Styx, and this the most solemn oath which a blessed god can take, that I mean you no sort of harm, and am only advising you to do exactly what I should do myself in your place. I am dealing with you quite straightforwardly. My heart is not made of iron, and I am very sorry for you." When she had thus spoken, she led the way rapidly before him, and Ulysses followed in her steps. So the pair, goddess and man, went on and on till they came to Calypso's cave, where Ulysses took a seat that Mercury had just left. Calypso set meat and drink before him, for the food that mortals eat, but her maids brought ambrosia and nectar for herself, and they laid their hands on the good things that were before them. When they had satisfied themselves with meat and drink, Calypso spoke, saying, "Ulysses, noble son of Laertes, so you would start home to your own land at once. Good luck go with you. But if you could only know how much suffering is in store for you before you get back to your own country, you would stay where you are and keep house along with me. And let me make you immortal, no matter how anxious you may be to see this wife of yours, of whom you are thinking all the time, day after day. Yet I flatter myself that I am no whit less tall or well good-looking than she is, for it is not to be expected that a mortal woman should compare in beauty with an immortal." "Goddess," replied Ulysses, "do not be angry with me about this. I am quite aware that my wife Penelope is nothing like so tall and so beautiful as yourself. She is only a woman, whereas you are an immortal. Nevertheless, I want to go home and can think of nothing else. If some god wrecks me where I am on the sea, I will bear it and make the best of it. I have had infinite trouble both by land and sea already, so let this go with the rest." Presently the sun set, and it became dark, whereon the pair retired into the inner part of the cave and went to bed. When the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, Ulysses put on his shirt and cloak, while the goddess wore a dress of the light gossamer fabric, very fine and graceful, with a beautiful golden girdle about her waist and a veil to cover her head. She had once set herself to think how she would speed Ulysses on his way. So she gave him a great bronze axe that suited his hands. It was sharpened on both sides and had a beautiful olive wood handle fitted firmly into it. She also gave him a sharp adze and led the way to the far end of the island where the largest trees grew, alder, poplar, and pine, that reached the sky, very dry and well seasoned, so as to sail light for him in the water. Then, when she had shown him where the best trees grew, Calypso went home, leaving him to cut them, which he soon finished doing. He cut down 20 trees in all, and adzed them smooth, and squaring them by rule in good workmanlike fashion. Meanwhile, Calypso came back and with some augers so that he bore holes in them and fitted the timbers together with bolts and rivets. He made the raft as broad and as a skilled shipwright makes the beam of a large vessel, and he fixed a deck on top of the ribs and ran a gunwale all around it. He made a mast with a yardarm and a rudder to steer with. He fenced the raft all around with wicker hurdles as a protection against the waves, and then he threw on a quantity of wood. By and by, Calypso brought him some of them to make sails, some linen to make sails. And he made these too, excellently, making them fast with braces and sheets. Last of all, with the help of levers, he drew the craft down to the water. In 4 days he had completed the whole work, and on the fifth Calypso sent him from the island after washing him and giving him some clean clothes. She gave him a goat skin full of black wine and another larger one of water. She gave him a wallet full of provisions and found him in much good meat. Moreover, she made the wind fair and warm for him, and gladly did Ulysses spread his sails before it. And when he sat and guided the raft skillfully by means of the rudder, he never closed his eyes, but kept them fixed on the Pleiades, on late-setting Butes, and on the bear, which men also call the wain, and which turns round and round where it is, facing Orion, and never alone dipping into the stream of Oceanus. For Calypso had told him to keep this to his left. Day 7 and 10 did he sail over the seas, and on the 18th the dim outline of mountains on the nearest part of the Phaeacian coast appeared, rising like a shield on the horizon. But King Neptune, who was returning from the Ethiopians, caught sight of Ulysses a long way off from the mountains of the Selimi. He could see him sailing upon the sea, and it made him very angry, so he wagged his head and muttered to himself, saying, "Good heaven, so the gods have been changing their minds about Ulysses while I was away in Ethiopia, and now he is close to the land of Phaeacians, where it is decreed that he shall escape from the calamities that have befallen him. Still, he shall have plenty of hardships yet before he's done with it." Thereon he gathered his clouds together, grasping his trident, stirring it round in the sea, and roused the rage of every wind that blows on earth and sky and sea, till the sea is hidden in the clouds, and night sprang forth from the heavens. Winds from the east, south, north, and west fell upon him at the same time, and a tremendous sea got up, so that Ulysses' heart began to fail him. "Alas," he said to himself in his dismay, "whatever will become of me? I am afraid Calypso was right when she said I should have trouble by sea before I got home. It is all coming true. How black is Jove making heaven with his clouds, and what a sea the winds are raising in every quarter at once. I am now safe to perish. Blessed and thrice blessed were those Danaans who fell before Troy in the cause of the son of Atreus. Would that I had been killed on the day when the Trojans were pressing me so sorely about the body of Achilles. For then I should have had due burial, and the Achaeans would have honored my name. But now it seems that I shall come to a most pitiable end." As he spoke, the sea broke over him with such terrific fury that the raft reeled again, and he was carried overboard a long way off. He let go the helm, and the force of the hurricane was so great that it broke the mast halfway up, and both sail and yard went over into the sea. For a long time Ulysses was under the water, and it was all he could do to rise to the surface again, for the clothes that Calypso had given him weighed him down. But at last he got his head above water and spat out the bitter brine that was running down his face in streams. In spite of all this, however, he did not lose sight of the raft, but swam as fast as he could toward it, got hold of it, and climbed aboard again so as to escape drowning. The seas took the raft and tossed it about as an autumn wind whirled thistledown round and round upon a road. It was as though the south, north, east, and west winds were all playing battador and shuttlecock with it at once. When he was in this plight, Ino, the daughter of Cadmus, also called Leucothea, saw him. She had formerly been a mere mortal, but had been since raised to the rank of a marine goddess. Seeing in what great distress Ulysses was now, she had compassion upon him, and rising like a seagull from the waves, took her seat upon the raft. "My poor good man," said she, "why is Neptune so furiously angry with you? He is giving you a great deal of trouble, but for all his bluster he will not kill you. You seem to be a sensible person. So then do as I bid you. Strip, leave your raft to drive before the winds, and swim to the Phaeacian coast, where better luck awaits you. And here, take my veil and put it round your chest. It is enchanted, and you will come to no harm as long as you wear it. And as soon as you touch land, take it off and throw it back as far as you can into the sea, and then go away again." With these words, she took off her veil and gave it to him. Then she dived down to the sea like a seagull and vanished beneath the dark blue waters. Ulysses did not know what to think. "Alas," he said to himself in dismay, "this is only some one or other of the gods who is luring me to ruin by advising me to quit my raft. At any rate, I will not do so at present, for the land where she said I should be quit of all my troubles still seemed to be a good way off. I know what will happen. I'm sure it will be best. No matter what happens, I will stick to the raft as long as her timbers hold together. But when the sea breaks her up, I'll swim for it. I don't see how I can do any better than this." And while he was thus in two minds, Neptune set a terrible wave that seemed to rear itself above his head till it broke right over the raft, which then went to pieces as though it were a heap of dry chaff tossed about by the whirlwind. Ulysses got astride of one plank and rode it as it were on a horseback. Then he took off the clothes Calypso had given him, bound Ino's veil under his arms, and plunged into the sea, meaning to swim on to shore. King Neptune watched him as he did so and wagged his head, muttering to himself and saying, "There now, swim up and down as best you can till you have fallen with well-to-do people. I do not think you'll be able to say that I have let you off too lightly." And on this he lashed his horses and drove to Aegae, where his palace is. But Minerva resolved to help Ulysses, so she bound the ways of all the winds except one, and made them lie quite still. But she roused a good stiff breeze from the north that should lay the waters till Ulysses reached the land of Phaeacians, where he would be safe. Thereon he floated for about 2 days and 2 nights, in the water, with a heavy swell on the sea and death staring him in the face. But when the third day broke, the wind fell, and there was a dead calm, without so much as a breath of air stirring. And as he rose on the swell, he looked eagerly ahead, and could see land quite near. Then, as children rejoice when their dear father begins to get better after having a long time borne sore affliction, sent by some angry spirit, but the gods deliver him from evil, so was Ulysses thankful when he again saw land and trees, and swam on with all his strength that he might once more set foot upon dry land. When, however, he got within earshot, he began to hear the surf thundering up against the rocks, for the swell sea still broke with them with a terrific roar. Everything was enveloped in spray. There were no harbors where a ship might ride, nor shelter of any kind, but only headlands, low-lying rocks, and mountaintops. Ulysses' heart now began to fail him, and he said despairingly to himself, "Alas, Jove has sent me sea land after swimming so far that I had given up all hope, but I can find no landing place, for the coast is rocky and surf-beaten, and the rocks are smooth and rise sheer from the sea, with deep water close under them, so I cannot climb out for want of foothold. I am afraid some great wave will lift me off my feet and dash me against the rocks as I leave the water, which would give me a sorry landing. If, on the other hand, I swim further in search of some shelving or beach or anchor, a hurricane may carry me out to sea again sorely against my will, or heaven may send some great monster of the deep to attack me, for Amphitrite breeds many such, and I know that Neptune is very angry with me." When he was thus in two minds, a wave caught him and took him with such force against the rocks that he would have been smashed and torn to pieces if Minerva had not shown him what to do. He caught foot of the rock with both hands and clung to it, groaning with pain till the wave retired. So he was saved that time, but presently the sea came on again and carried him back with it, far out into the sea, tearing his hands as the suckers of a polypus are torn when someone plucks it from its bed, and the stones came along with it. Even so did the rocks tear the skin from his strong hands, and then the waves drew him deep down under the water. Here, Poor Ulysses would have certainly perished, even in spite of his own destiny, if Minerva had not helped him to keep his wits about him. He swam seaward again, beyond the reach of the surf that was beating against the land, and at the same time he kept looking toward the shore to see if he could find some haven or a spit that he could take the waves aslant. By and by, as he swam on, he came to the mouth of a river, and there he thought would be the best place, for there were no rocks, and it afforded him shelter from the wind. He felt that there was a current, so he prayed inwardly and said, "Hear me, O king, whoever you may be, and save me from the anger of the sea god Neptune, for I approach you prayerfully, as one who has lost his way, and at all times a claim even upon the gods, wherefore in my distress I draw near to your stream, and cling to the knees of your riverhood. Have mercy upon me, O king, for I declare myself your suppliant." Then the god stayed his stream and stilled the waves, making all calm before him, bringing him safely to the mouth of the river. Here at last Ulysses' knees and strong hands failed him, for the sea had completely broken him. His body was all swollen, and his mouth and nostrils ran down like a river with seawater, so that he could neither breathe nor speak, and lay swooning from sheer exhaustion. Presently, when he got his breath and came to himself again, he took off the scarf that Ino had given him and threw it back into the salt stream of the river, whereon Ino received it into her hands from the wave that bore it toward her. Then he left the river and laid himself down among the rushes and kissed the bounteous earth. "Alas!" he cried to himself in his dismay, "whatever will become of me, and how will it all come to end? If I stay here upon the river bed, though the long watches of the night, I am so exhausted that the bitter cold and damp may make an end of me, for towards sunrise there will be a keen wind blowing from the river. If, on the other hand, I climb the hillside and find shelter in the woods and sleep in some thicket, I may escape the cold and have a good night's rest, but some savage beast may take advantage of and devour me." In the end, he deemed it best to take to the wood, and he found at one some high ground not far from the water, and there he crept between two shoots of olive trees that grew from a single stalk, one an ungrafted sucker, and the other had been grafted. No wind, however squally, could break through the cover they afforded, nor could the sun's rays pierce them, nor rain get through, so closely did they grow into one another. Ulysses crept under these and began to make himself a bed to lie on, for there was a great deal of dead leaves lying about, enough to make a covering for two or three men even in a hard winter weather. He was glad enough to see this, so he laid himself down and heaped the leaves around him. Then, as one who lives alone in the country far from any neighbor hides a brand as a fire seed in the ashes save himself from having to get a light somewhere, even so did Ulysses cover himself up with the leaves. And Minerva shed a sweet sleep upon his eyes, closed his eyelids, and made him lose all memory of his sorrow.